All right, now we have a half an hour, folks, and we went over the problems from chapter 6 and constant perpetual discounted cash flow model on Tuesday. So I really don't want to go over those again unless you want to stick around after class and I'll go over them again. But if there's one thing you're going to learn before you get out of this damn classroom, it's how to discount a future stream of cash flows. And this is going to help, I hope. This is an optional. There's not going to be on the exam. No assignments or anything. It's an example of what you will have in store for yourself if you take investments in finance at the university level, when you get to the third or fourth upper division or a graduate level, because they do things a little differently. But the cool thing about this class, at least in my humble opinion, is that you have the foundation. You have the foundation to become prudent, long-term investors. If you want to be a short-term trader, you got to go someplace else. I apologize. Talk to George. How much did they want to charge you for that two-week seminar? $5,000 for a two-week seminar. Okay.
I want to do a little bit of more than...
Then you want to be somewhere in between, right? That's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I don't believe any of it. Now, if we go back to chapter 6, we recall that a fundamental assertion of finance holds that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. We look at a stock as a machine that's going to give us cash in the future. The dividends, and then the expected price of the stock. And we saw that some stocks don't pay dividends, so then all we're looking at is the expected price in the future. But the present value calculations are not limited to stocks, and we're going to do the same thing with bonds in the next couple of chapters. We can calculate the present value of a future stream of income from any source. It doesn't matter. Real estate, factories, bridges, water projects, nuclear reactors. And you already know how to compute the present value of any stream of income. Armed with your present value tables, your spreadsheet, you can do it. Do you remember the formula? The one we never used? Although, I got to do something about this because some of the online students tried using this formula. Some of them did it perfectly, and others, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. And that's part of the driving people me insane about teaching online. In this version, the cash flows were dividends, and this price of the stock when we forecast we were ready to sell. But they could be any cash flow. Rent from a real estate, bridge tolls from a bridge, electricity generation from a power plant. So you remember the example, right, from Pretzels Unlimited. If we require a rate of return of 12%, we use the present value multipliers for 12% and the future value, the future cash flows, and then calculate the present value. And we saw that the present value was higher than what we have to pay for that stock. Does this look familiar? Nod your head yes, or go, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. All right, good. And we used the spreadsheet, which made it a whole lot easier for us to do, first conceptually, and then the spreadsheet calculates it for us, and we don't have to type in the present value multipliers. We just tell our required rate of return. Since 23.81 is greater than the current market price of $22, we would consider this a good investment for our required rate of return of 12%. Okay. The present value told us what we thought the future stream of income that we're going to, the future cash flows, are worth to us today. And if it were roughly equal to or greater than the current price, what we had to pay for today for that future stream of income, then we predicted it was a good investment for us for our desired required rate of return. Recall that the required rate of return was very important because as we changed the required rate of return, the present value changed, sometimes greatly, depending on you just plug in a different number and wham, especially with that constant perpetual growth model. Okay, Pagliano, what is NPV, net present value? When you get to the graduate level or upper division, they're not going to use present value. They're going to use net present value. It's just change the channel a little bit. Net present value takes into account all cash flows coming into your investment and all the cash outflows, all things that you have to pay to get. If net present value is positive, it's a good return for our required rate of return. And if it's negative, then it's not a good investment for our desired required rate of return. So essentially, what we have to do is add the fact that we had to pay $22 to buy the stock at time zero. Are you with me? That's the only difference between present value and net present value. So when you add up the discounted cash flows and the present value multiplier is 1 because it's today, yes?
Can you repeat that one more time?
Repeat what I just said? Exactly. If we go, let's go back to the first one. Present value shows us what we believe it is worth without taking into effect what we had to pay to get it. Right? In other words, we didn't put the $22 that we had to pay for the stock, and we just said, oh, look, this is higher than $22. It's a good investment. Net present value says, put the $22 into the equation. Put the 22 that we had to, notice it's parentheses. That means it's negative, right? Okay, you understand that? Parentheses are negative. You folks haven't taken accounting. Yeah, accountants don't use negative signs. It's a little bit of trivia. What did the accountants, they never use, they hate negative signs. What did they use first?
What's the difference between the 27 that we had in 2018?
The 22 is what we have to pay for today. The 27 is what we believe it's going to be worth in 4 years. That's the expected price. Either we get it from Value Line or we do our own little, you know, if you think it's going to do that well. Now, that's a real piece of trivia. What did accountants use before they used parentheses? It's still in the language. Red ink. You've heard the companies in the red? That means they're losing money. Black Friday, that was the time that the Black Friday on Thursday, after the Friday after Thanksgiving, when the retailers made money. The whole year they're losing money, and then that day they make money. That's why it's called Black Friday, not because it's horrible. It's horrible anyway. But so when you see parentheses, you know that's a negative. Why did they stop using red ink? This is a bit of trivia. It might win you $50 at a bar or something. I'll give you a hint. It happened in the 1950s. Copying machines. Because you copy red ink, what does it do? Turns black. So they couldn't use red ink anymore because it's Xerox. So they had to use, sometimes they'll use angle brackets, but they usually use parentheses. Okay, so we see that by putting the $22 into the equation, we have a net present value that is positive. If the net present value were negative, then that would say, oh, well, you're probably not going to get that required rate of return. Make sense? Are you following me? Don't worry. It's not going to be an exam. Okay. Are you sick and tired of calculating present value using the present value tables? Yes? Good. Because that means I've done my job. That means you know how to calculate and understand what it means to discount a future stream of cash flows. And it's easier than using the formula, right, with the exponent in it. But, of course, the spreadsheet is the real easy way. Spreadsheets calculate present value and net present value without breaking a sweat. And this time we'll take another look, this time adding NPV. Someday, it's never going to happen, but I want to add a lab component to this class. I want to have, I don't know, maybe a 1 unit. I'm not sure how it's, I don't know what's going to happen. It's not going to happen, so forget it, Piano. But I'd like to take you into the lab and have you use the spreadsheets. The online students, I've noticed, they're more amenable to using the spreadsheets. But you guys learn how to use the calculator, and that's what you do. And, of course, during the exam, I can't pass out laptops for you to use spreadsheets. So what am I going to do? So, okay, let's take a look now at the spreadsheet. Ooh, here it is. So on the website now, I put this Excel spreadsheet up. So here is the, is that right? No, I'm missing. I'm on the wrong one. Oops, sorry, excuse me. Here we go. Present value versus net present value. So here is the formula we did, present value. And these calculations, I didn't type those numbers in. I let the spreadsheet do it, right? Didn't I do that? Or did I type them in? No, I let the spreadsheet calculate them. That's the formula right there. That is the net present value formula that's built into the tables. So you'll notice these numbers are the exact same numbers for whatever it is, 12%. But I didn't type those numbers in. And you'll notice that instead of 23.81, it comes up to 23.8 because these numbers are 20 digits of accuracy. The ones in the table are just 3. But so there's the present value. But when I use the net present value formula, so you don't even do that. You just use a spreadsheet. Look at that. Net present value, NPV, putting my required rate of return in wherever that happens to be. There it is, 12% required rate of return from 13 down to 26. And the. Do you need the present value tables when you use a spreadsheet? No, and all you have to do, folks, when you want to recalculate, is come over here and say, well, what if I wanted 13%? Oh, what if I want 14%? What if I want 15%? See what's happening? It actually automatically calculates it. But now, what's this guy? What's the net present value when we, that's the present value, but what's the net present value when we include the $22? $1.60. Are you with me? It's positive. That means that including the cash outflow that we had to get to buy the stock, it came out positive. It was a positive investment. We're expecting us to get that 12%. And notice that as I change the number here, did you see that also change? 11%, it went up. If I go to 14%, it will go down. And finally, at 15%, it goes negative. See, now it's saying, you ain't going to get 15% out of this investment. And so, when you... I'm sorry. That's net present value. But the net present value, when you don't include the initial cash outflow, gives us the present value. That's the. You understand what the word net means in this case?
Don't you have to type in a multiplier to do that?
It does it for us. The computer does it for us. We don't have to type the multipliers. The computer knows, it's an algorithm. It knows to use the present value multipliers. It calculates them automatically. So it takes those cash flows and discounts them automatically. That's why spreadsheets are very, very cool. And you want to take business one, or no, CIS 122B or whatever, and learn how to use a spreadsheet because it.
So when you type in that equals NPV, required rate of return, it automatically knows.
Well, because required rate of return is 12%. That's all that's saying is go here for that number. I don't know if this is called a range name. You probably don't know what the hell I'm doing. But instead of using D10, if I put D10 there, it means the same thing. But I gave that a name. I said required rate of return is D10. And so go to D10 and use that 12%. And then that formula knows to go to the table. It just calculates and doesn't go to a table. It calculates the present value multipliers for these years, multiplies them out, and adds up the amount. Everything that you have to do manually, right?
It's been a while since I've taken that class.
But the spreadsheet class, yeah, I know. And in fact, I'm doing stuff that you don't usually even learn in a spreadsheet class because this has to do with if you take a finance class later on in upper division, they're going to make if you don't know Excel, they're going to really be nasty to you. You understand? If you go to SDSU, if you don't know Excel, they're just, I know that you better learn it. You should learn it if you're going to go into finance. So are we with me, everybody? Everybody with me? Okay, so now let's go back to the spread.
Really cool,
I know it is! I know. And what's so interesting is that it's easier to get the online students to use the spreadsheets than it is to get the face-to-face students to use the spreadsheets. Now this brings us back to internal rate of return. We saw the internal rate of return in chapter 6. And this very popular measure that business people and investors use when measuring the rate of return from a stream of income. You will also learn how to compute the internal rate of return manually if you go on to an upper division or graduate level finance class. Specifically, the internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return where the net present value equals zero. Huh? It's easier to show it to you than it is to explain it to you. If you're into math, you will know this. Oh, this is Newton's method. We did this in one class or something like that. Okay. So here, what I did is I plugged in various rates, required rates of return. And then I graphed what the net present value, not the present value, but the net present value. And what happens is the internal rate of return is where that net present value crosses the x-axis. That's how it's calculated. And when you do it manually, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to choose one, okay, it's positive, and then choose one on the other side, okay, it's negative, I'm close. And then you get closer and closer and closer, and then you got to find the number manually. Hang on a minute. You got to do that manually. How often do you think you want to do that? That's why computers are... Can a computer just... You just let it do its thing and it does it. Yes?
No, what's the x-axis?
The x-axis is where it's zero. The x-axis... I'm sorry, no. The zero is where the x... I'm not saying that right. The x-axis is the percentage, our required rate of return. The y-axis in this case is net present value. Where it crosses. The internal rate of return is where the net present value is zero. That's the definition of internal rate of return. And that's why there are computers. Because do you want to do this over and over again?
So you don't have to know what the x-axis is.
No, you just type the future cash flows. As you go back to the... Let's take a look at the internal rate of return. You type in the cash flows, boom, 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 and then over here, in this formula right here, you just say, where did it go? I want the internal rate of return for these cash flows, and I'm guessing, and you don't even have to do that, just put zero, and it will guess. I'm guessing that it's 12%. And all you're doing is you're giving an approximation, and then the computer algorithm has to do it itself. And you don't have to. You just put zero in there. And if it can find it, it will. If it can't find it, it'll come back and give you an error message. Because there are situations where it can't find the internal rate of return. There are some where there's no internal rate of return. It never touches the zero, the x-axis. Never hits zero. And then you'll get an error message. But those are really strange situations. Very strange. Because internal rate of return is not perfect, as we'll see. It gives some very weird results sometimes. Questions? Thoughts? Don't you think this is cool? I do, you know, what can I say? Because this is all you really need to go out there and become an investor, depending on what you're investing in. Without a spreadsheet, computing internal rate of return is not easy. In fact, it's a real PETA. You know what PETA is, right? Pain in the... I've not done it manually. Believe it or not, folks, I have not done it manually since I left graduate school in 1987. That's why they make computers. Plus, as we saw in the spreadsheet, what we're going to see is that they can give us very bizarre and unreliable results. Sometimes there can be more than one internal rate of return. With odd or unusual streams of cash flows and inflows, you really should check the net present value graph. You should make that graph like the one we saw in the spreadsheet to check if your internal rate of return is reasonable. And so what's after this? And so how does having a spreadsheet change the way we do our calculations? The real question is not much, really, but it makes calculating the present value, the net present value, the internal rate of return much, much, much easier. Tables aren't that hard, and it gives you an extremely precise result when calculating your rate of return from a stream of future income, which is exactly what I don't want you to come to rely on. Okay? Now, I think I burned that into your brain. All these predictions we make are what? Yeah, not, yeah, I wouldn't use the word random. Let's do a little bit better. They are, I think, educated guesses. I think you used that term. They're just tilting the odds in our favor, putting our finger up and seeing which way the wind's blowing. Unless you're calculating the return from a very predictable source of income, and that's bonds, and we'll see how bonds are very predictable, except for where interest rates go. That's the one thing you can't predict. Precision is your enemy. Never forget that you're predicting the future, and as the old saying goes, attributed to Niels Bohr, attributed to Mark Twain, a Yogi Berra, prediction is difficult, especially about the future. So let's go back to the spreadsheet and take a look at a bond. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We'll come back to this later on. But when we buy a bond, it normally costs us $1,000, right? It might be more, it might be less, discount, premium bonds. We'll discuss that later. If the bond is paying 8%, we're going to get $80 every year. It's a 10-year bond. So $1,000 we pay in the first year, we get $80. And then in 10 years, we get our $80 of interest, and we get the $1,000 back. And so the internal rate of return tells us, oh, you're going to get 8%. But what happens if we have to pay a premium for that bond? Sometimes you have to pay a premium for a bond, and so you might have to pay $1,200. Then what happens is you're not going to get the 8%. I mean, they're going to pay you $80, but that's on $1,000, on the par value. But we're only going to get basically 5.36%. We'll learn how to do an approximation, which will be 5.45. And on a $1,200 bond, if we're getting 8%, the coupon rate, it's called, we're only going to get 5.36%. Now, let's continue with a duplex, real estate. How much is a duplex in Chula Vista these days? About what? $350? So, well, yeah, in the tonier neighborhoods. Yeah, in the tonier neighborhoods, a duplex might be $750. But if you search around, $400,000. You can get a duplex, you know, in the more blue collar, working class, whatever you want to call it, neighborhoods, for about $400,000. Now, how much rent are you going to get for a duplex? $1,500 a month, $1,200 a month.
How much rent?
Yeah, how much rent?
We just bought a duplex. We paid $385 for it, and then we charged the people in the back $2,100.
$2,100?
Yeah, they have four bedrooms in the back.
What a deal. I want to put this one in. Okay, how much did you pay?
$385.
And so you're getting?
Getting?
Yeah, how much?
$2,100 a month.
$2,100. Times 12 plus, this guy's a good investor, $1,350 times 12. So you're getting $40,000 in rent?
Is that what the utilities include?
It's just water. Water's included.
Ah, you see, okay, hang on, it's a good question. We have to throw it in.
$100 in water.
So let's subtract 100. Okay, 100 times 12. So you're getting about $40,000 in rent. These people are smart. Okay, so that's a good deal. So let's take a look. They put in the $385,000.
Where's it at?
Oh, National City. But still, $2,100. That's pretty good. Good for you. And so here's what's happening now, folks. You see, we can use the same internal rate of return, net present value, for these calculations. But it's not a stock, it's not a bond, it's a duplex. Because they're going to get $40,000. Now, what I'm doing is I'm upping it 2% a year. Do you think that's realistic? 2% a year? Rent going up 2%? That doesn't go up every year. That it goes up, you know, in fits and spurts. But over the next 30-odd years, is it realistic to believe that they're going to get a 2% raise on their rent? I think it might be actually conservative. It might be 4% or more, but let's say 2%. And at the end, this is the real tricky part, how much do you think that duplex is going to be worth? I put $700,000. But do you think it might be worth more?
Yeah.
What number? $800,000? This is where you're just, you know, okay, let's put $800,000. it probably will be more worth more. And so what the spreadsheet is telling us is that it believes the internal rate of return is 12.5% on their investment. And the net present value, they paid $385, but the net present value is over $100,000. So that means the present value is that amount plus the $385. So this is a very good investment. You understand? But this is totally unrealistic.
There might be more. I've never heard of a $4 million.
Yeah, there might be more. Did you actually pay $385,000 in cash? This is why the real estate investors get angry at me when I teach real estate and I start talking about, well, real estate, it goes up about 7% a year. And they, what are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. Like, relax, I'll get to the leverage. Did you actually plunk down $385,000? How much? $100,000?
A little more than $100,000.
Yeah. You see, they only had to put up, whoa, come on. Where is it? Here's the mouse. They only put up $100,000. They only had to put up the down payment. But now, wait a minute. What do we have to do to the rent? No, we have to subtract it because where did the other $285,000 come from? The mortgage, right? The bank wants to get paid, so the mortgage is probably what, $2,300? Hey, not bad. Okay, so we got to subtract $2,300 minus $2,300, whoa, times 12. And so you see, even after taking out the mortgage, they're getting a better rate of return. But the net present value is less. Why is that? Because they're having to pay that mortgage over the time, and those dollars are being discounted into the future. Are you with me? That's why real estate investors get angry at me when I talk about how great stocks are. Yeah, but you're not using financial leverage. I think, thank God. Because that can kill you, too. Leverage is cool. They're using the bank's money to make their money. Understand? The bank doesn't get the rent. The bank doesn't get, well, they're indirectly getting the rent because that's the mortgage. But they don't get any of the appreciation. They don't get the $800,000 at the end of the 40 years, after 30 years after the property's gone up in value. Am I getting through? Yeah? And so you see the techniques that you've learned in this class can go to real estate, can go to nuclear reactors. Let's take a look at the nuclear reactor. Now, this is fun, I think, because I've never worked in a public agency which where the numbers... You see, the only difference is the zeros get a lot more. There's a whole lot more zeros. How much does it cost to build a nuclear reactor? I don't know. I'm putting $2.5 billion, okay? I don't really know how much it costs. But let's put $2.5 billion. And let's assume that thing generates $250 million of electricity every year, which I think is... pretty fair assumptions. Call SDG&E, ask them, they'll say, don't talk to us, we don't own any. And they shut down the last one that they had. They were only one quarter owners of San Onofre, right? Anybody know that? I think LA? PG&E?
Yeah.
PG&E, not SDG&E. PG&E was the big owner of San Onofre. So $2.5 billion, $250 million, increasing it, I think, 1%. I think I increased it 1% a year. And then after 40 years, what do you have to do with a nuclear reactor? You got to get rid of it. You have to decommission it. And so that ain't cheap, folks. You've got to pay $1.2 billion at the end of 40 years to clean it up. And they don't even know what they're going to do with San Onofre. Do you know that? They're just saying, well, maybe we'll just let it sit there. We don't know what to do with all that, because they don't know what to do with the waste. And so you have to put in the initial cash outflow and the initial cash outflow, terminal cash outflow to clean the mess up. And the internal rate of return tells us that that's worth about 10% if these numbers are real. Questions? But again, this is not realistic, because did SDG&E and PG&E actually pay $2.5 billion cash out of their pockets? No, they sold bonds to build the nuclear reactor. So So what we have to do is we have to decrease this number to whatever they had to come up with, maybe 250 million, and then put the interest payments on the bonds every year until they finally paid them off. Cool? But one last caveat before I let you go. As I warned you, sometimes internal rate of return can give you very weird results. Which investment would you rather have? A one where you paid $10,000 in year number one, and in year number two, you got $15,000. Or another investment that gave you $10,000 one year, but you had to pay $15,000 the next. You'd rather have the first one, right? Well, the internal rate of return says that they're both giving you 50% on your money, even though this one is a horrible investment. How could that be? I don't understand. It's the way the graphs do weird things. It's nonlinear. Okay, so again, is this going to be on the exam? No. But I just wanted to pique your interest and show you that you have learned very awesome techniques. If anybody wants to stick around and do any of the problems from chapter 17 or 6, I will stick around for a while. Who came in late? George, Nathan's gone, Kenny's here, Kyle, yes, Christina, yes, Vicky, yes, Jerry, no, Marco, yes, Jerry, yes, Yvette, David Martinez, Joel's here, yes, and Chanel, no, Desiree, yes, Victor, yes, Chris, yes, Miguel, no, Isaiah Tapia, here, no, and Martinique, yes, and Jacob was already here. Okay, good. All right. Okay, who wants to do chapter 6, 17? Yes, George. Okay, yeah?
As you did help on the homework, and you do very well, you could have trouble finding
the
ratio on the bottom here.
Well, you have, did you go to the, did you get the balance sheet and the income statement?
Yeah, I have it in there.
Okay, hang on a minute, let's do some chapters, yes?
Yeah, we know.
Chapter, okay, where'd it go? Where'd that go? I gave them all out to people. Chapter 7. Any extras? Chapter 7 and 8. I got you, James. Anybody have any extras? Chapter? I passed them all out today. Yes?
Was this correct that the income went down?
That's the top line numbers went down. But the bottom line numbers went down too. Yeah.
For 3 years.
3 years in a row, yeah.
Okay. So this.
Well, you know what's going on with Caterpillar is China is slowing.
Yeah.
And they
so
are.
This number would be a negative number, right? With the
if you believe that they're going to continue to, right. If you believe they're going to continue to go down.
Well, they said this year.
They're going to turn it around. This
said this is going to be a bad year.
Yeah.
This year. That's what they said on the call.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. Yeah,
so would it be a good time to wait, sit on your hands for 6 months, and then buy it?
That's why I said get rid of it now, because by the end of the semester...
Yeah, it probably will. You're right. Yeah, David.
How can I turn it online?
Turn them in online?
Or
you just print them out and give them to me, yeah. Print them out and give them to me. If you want to turn them in online, you can. You want to?
No, it's because I didn't want my PDFs.
Yeah,
print it out, or email me the PDF. Yeah, but make sure you put, yes, don't do it, because I lose them. I get so many emails every day that I lose them. Are we have a meeting in here, boss?
No.
Okay. Do you need me to sign something?
Yes.
Oh, I do have to sign it. Okay.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it down.
Okay. You can print them out, bring them in, or email them, but put big, bold letters on signing, because we get so many emails every day.
Right here.
Time or
just your initials or whatever, just so it's framed.
Okay.
Thank you.
You.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm still bouncing. I'm still hobbling around. Okay. So roll ball, and so it's much better. Much better. Nothing's broken, but it's just taking forever. All right. So why don't we do? Which do you want to do? The discounted cash flow or the constant perpetual?
Constant
perpetual.
Long one.
And then we'll do one of the long ones. Okay, we'll do a constant perpetual, a discounted cash flow, and then we'll do ratio analysis. All right? So let's take a look at.
What would this one be? Because I haven't done this one.
Those are these are the price ratios. This one is exactly the same as these two.
Okay.
Remember, all the answer keys are on the website. So let's do worksheet number one.
It's a constant perpetual growth model.
Constant perpetual growth model. That's the name of the one. Let's do it. Let's do it. Come on. Hang on a minute. Let's do one thing at a time. So let's do worksheet valuation number one. Now, that's the one you have, right? These are the price models. They will not be on the exam. Here's the zero growth model, which is basically a singular example, a special case of the constant perpetual, where the growth is zero. But this is the one that we're interested in right here. So let's make this a little bit bigger. Pretty Good Pretzels is paying 85 cents per year in dividends. Their dividend growth rate has been very constant at 4%. Our expected rate of return is 9%. At what price would we consider this a good investment? So, which dividend discount model do we use? When we see or read that they have been growing their dividends consistently or constantly, that's the key to use the constant perpetual growth model. And the model is very simple. You take the annual dividends and you multiply times 1 plus the dividend growth rate. We divide that by our required or expected rate of return minus the dividend growth rate. And you see that the zero growth model is simply this model with this number being zero. You put zero there, then these things just disappear, and you have annual dividends divided by required rate of return. So it's the same thing, but we give it a special name because the dividends aren't growing. So now, if the annual dividends are how much?
$0.85.
And what's the growth rate?
4%.
So what's 1 plus 4%?
1.04.
Exactly, 1.04. And then we divide that by the required rate of return, which we expect 9%, and we subtract the growth rate, which is, what's the growth rate? 4%. Okay, no one there. Here, 1.04 here, 1.04 here. But there, it's 0.09. Yes, I remember you did that. This is 0.09. This is 0.04. George, do you understand? You got to know this. Come see me, okay? Come to my office. We'll discuss this right now. Do you understand that this is not 1.4, it is 1.04? All right? And this is not 1.9, this is?
1.09.
No, it's 0.09.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. That's what he was doing. He put 1.9 there. So now we have 0.85 times 1.04, and that's 0.89 or something like that. Who's got the calculator?
Wait.
0.85 times 1.04.
It's
0.884. And then 0.09 minus 0.04 is?
Yeah,
0.05. And 0.884 divided by 0.05.
$17.68.
Okay? So I'm going to write these numbers in for you, okay? And remember, there's an answer key on the website. So 1.04, 0.09, 0.04. And you got that right, though. You got 0.05. Wait, I'm confused. You got 0.884. You got the number right, even though you... Oh, I guess you did 1.04. Is that what you put there?
Yeah, I just did it right now.
Oh, you did it right now. I'm sorry. Okay. So now, when you take 0.884 divided by 0.05, you get 17.68. Okay, now, real quick, let's do number 6. Jimba Jamba Jumba Juice is selling for $56 per share. The next 3 years, both through 2015, 2016, 2017. See, we build the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet, of course, makes life a whole lot easier. So, yes, James?
I thought you was here by yourself. I was going to ask you a question about something.
Can you just hang on? We're going to do this one, and then I'll come right out, okay? All right. So, what are the dividends for 2015?
$180.
A dollar short. Are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the 2016? And then 2017? And then, what do we believe the stock price is going to be worth? We believe that at the end of 2017, we're going to be able to sell the stock for $75. So now, we are going to discount that at 10%. So we go into the tables, and we look for the three present value multipliers.
I got 0.909.
826.
751.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I got.
That's good. So now what we're going to do is we're going to discount those cash flows. $1.80 times 0.909 is, I know that, $90. I mean, I don't know.
I have one.
Where are you brain by now? It's a dollar something or other.
1.63,
close enough for government work. $2 times 0.826, 1.652. And then we have to add these two. $2.25 plus $75 is
$77.25.
It's
58.001.
Betsy says 58.001?
No, 0.014.
Do you understand why we add these two numbers, George? Isaiah?
Are you doing that by 10% also, the 75? You're going to do so. You're going to do 77.25 times 0.10?
0.751.
0.751.
10% is our required rate of return.
On the third year. So you
you've got to use... You don't have the tables with you. That's the problem. You need a table. You need to have a table in front of you. Look at the three numbers for 10. Look at the three numbers for 10%. Go across 10%.
Okay, 10%.
What do you think? What do you think?
0.751.
Ah. Exactly. Exactamundo. So 0.909, 0.826, 0.751.
Okay.
Okay. So then these are the discounted cash flows. The $1.80 that we're going to get next year is worth to us today $1.63. The $2 we're going to get in 2 years is worth to us $1.62. And the $77.25 we're going to get in 3 years is worth $58. So when we add these three together, we should get around $60.
So this is what we're paying right now,
$58. No, we're paying $56.
Oh,
there's the market price.
Okay.
And we believe it's worth, add these three numbers together,
$296
are about $61.30. So we believe we can buy a stock that we think is worth $61 for $56. This is a good deal for us. Questions? All right, now, that's going to be on the exam. Now, next thing, chapter 17. Which one were you having trouble with, George?
Actually, all of them. But
all of them? Okay.
Because they're not listed on the...
No, you have to calculate them.
On here as they are on their sheet. So
what?
Gave us.
Oh, wait, wait a minute. I'm not sure. Hang on a minute. One thing at a time. Chapter 17. All right, so which, let's get the formulas in for chapter 17 up on the screen. Formulas. There's the formulas. Okay, so which formula are you talking about?
So, like, for example, on my second stock that I did.
What's your stock?
Pfizer.
Pfizer, PFE.
And I found the operating margin, but because...
Okay, well, let's take a look. First, we got to look at the income statement. Oh, look. You know, Yahoo, they just keep making it worse and worse and worse, and people are saying how great Yahoo is, and I'm saying it's not working anymore. How can you say it's good? Okay, so we look up Pfizer's income statement. So what do we need for the operating margin? If we look at the formula sheet, what does it say we need?
Operating income divided by total revenue.
Excellent. So where would we find operating income? Where would we find total revenue?
In income statement.
On the income statement. And on the income statement, we see that the total revenue, the top line number, that's often called the top line number, is 49,605. So we write that down somewhere. Get my pen. 49,605. And you can ignore the last three zeros, or you can put them there if you want. And then what's the operating income?
It's the bottom line.
That's the net income. Net income is called the bottom line. But where's operating? Gross profit. Yeah.
13.
Right. Those are the expenses. The operating expenses are 26,759.
Oh, it's in a net.
There it is. Did you see it, George?
No.
Come on in.
No.
Third. You don't see it?
Registered.
What? Come on in. No, not yet. Noon it will be. How you doing?
Great, and you?
I'm doing okay. I had a bad accident with my foot, but it's a lot better now. Okay. Now, George, do you see this? Okay, we found the total revenue. You found that, right?
Yeah, the total revenue.
Total revenue. We're looking at Pfizer. Did you print out Pfizer's?
No, I didn't.
You didn't print out Pfizer's. Well, this is Pfizer's. That's Caterpillar. If you want to do Caterpillar, we can do Caterpillar.
No, I'm talking about Pfizer.
Okay, well, this is Pfizer's right here on the screen. And if we look at the formula sheet says that we need the operating income and the total revenue. You see the formula sheet?
Yeah.
If we come to the income statement, we see that the top line, the revenue, is at the top, total revenue. The net income is at the bottom. But we're not looking for net income margin. We're looking at operating income margin. So can you find operating income on the income statement? Don't look there. Here's the income statement. That's just the formula. What you're looking for is this guy right here. It says operating income, also known as operating income or loss. So do you see anywhere where you see operating income?
Well,
that's the expenses.
Income.
Yes, operating income or loss. So that's the one we're looking for. So you got to do some digging. So what's the number?
1009.
13249.
Can you read them?
13,249, right. You might not be able to read it. Maybe I can make it a little bit bigger. Okay, so that's what we're interested in.
Is this an assignment?
Yeah, it's part of the assignment for chapter 17.
Okay.
Is to go into, and I gave you five different stocks to choose from, but you could do any real company. Don't do a penny stock, all right? Any good company that's a real company that's out there doing business, just don't do a schlock company. And I picked Pfizer, Cisco. There are two different Ciscos.
This has nothing to do with
someone
the stuff we turned in.
No,
today, right?
Nothing. Well, no, this is the assignment for today.
No, I mean this, the one we turned in today. This has nothing to do with
this
that.
This is the one we did. We did chapter 17. It was supposed to be done today.
Okay, because I turned something into you today, but I didn't print this out.
You didn't print it out?
I didn't print that out.
Oh, here it is.
Yeah, okay, so this is that.
Yeah, but
okay,
you're supposed
to do
a couple from each section. See, these you just looked up, right?
Yeah, what did you want me to do?
I wanted you to do the calculations.
Oh.
Oh. That's chapter 17. And you have the formula sheet?
This is the formula sheet?
No, the other formula sheet. I'm running out of them. Come to my office. You need a formula sheet for chapter 17. Okay. Here's the formula sheet on the screen. There's the formula sheet. Financial ratio.
So we're going to use that one for the test?
Well, I'll bring extras. I'll bring extras. But, yeah. There it is. There it is. You got it. Yeah, I'll make extras, though, in case you need them.
And then, how do you get price sales?
That one, don't worry about that one. You can, okay, well, let's go. You got to really take a look at the key statistics. Okay? Hang on a minute, James, right there. Where is it?
Yeah, I'll be back.
Okay, it gives you the revenue and then the number of shares out there, shares outstanding. So you got to divide the sales, 49.60 billion, divided by how many shares there are, 6.13 billion. And that gives you the sales per share, and then you take the price and divide that by the sales per share. But don't worry about that one.
Yeah. I'm sorry, did you finish the...
We just did the one.
Operating.
Well, take it. Do it. You can do it. You got your calculator. 13. And then we got to go to my office. Okay, because... Fuck! Okay, James, question. Is it personal or is it something you can ask everybody?
I watched a documentary last night on YouTube.
Yeah.
It was like 40, 50 minutes. And I just wanted your opinion on how... It was about, you know how we consume a lot of stuff from China?
Yeah.
And in the documentary, what they had is like, okay, for example, San Diego. Okay, in the United States, we have warehouses.
Right.
And so they used it like, okay, like the city of San Diego in China, like the cities are warehouses.
Okay.
And they have warehouses in the biggest cities. Like San Diego would be a big warehouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was wondering how, like if, Nike.
Bye-bye, Betsy.
Nike is the corporation.
Yeah.
But they have their stuff made over there. How would I research to invest into a Chinese manufacturing company over there in that country?
It's really difficult to invest in China. You have to go through intermediaries. For example, Alibaba. You think you're buying Alibaba, but you're not. You're buying a company that has a claim to Alibaba's future earnings and dividends.
Uh-huh.
So Chinese do not allow individual investors to go in and buy their shares. That's changing slowly, but right now I would suggest that if you really want to invest in China, to find a good mutual fund that invests in China. Do you really want to invest in China?
I was just thinking, like, okay, I should invest in the manufacturing
Like Foxconn? Well, Foxconn, I think you can invest in.
No, I'm saying the manufacturer. I don't know the manufacturing company.
Yeah, the one of the big manufacturing companies in China is called Foxconn, but I think it's actually based in Hong Kong.
Okay.
It's not based in China, so I think you can buy, or Taiwan? No. I forget. Look up Foxconn, because they make most of the Apple devices.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying.
That's the company that makes them. It's called Foxconn. And that's the one that had people committing suicide.
And
yeah,
you can.
I'm pretty sure you can invest in that one. Okay. Let's take a look. I don't think you can invest on the United States market. You're gonna have to.
And you know over there, in those buildings, they
have Foxconn Technology, 2354.tw. I don't know.
You see, where is it at?
2354.tw is the symbol. Whoosh. I don't know if I want to touch this. Foxconn, come on, sweetheart. TW, what is TW? Reportedly halts its investments in Xinjiang. Boy, I wish I could speak Chinese. $120 billion. But you're not buying, it's a Taiwanese company.
Taiwanese company.
You're buying on the Taiwan exchange. So,
you got to basically go to mutual fund, that's what you're saying.
I think it's a better deal to buy a good mutual fund that invests in the Asian world and around the world. But if you really want to invest in Chinese companies, you're going to have to do a whole lot of research about how to do it effectively. You could buy companies like Alibaba. I think it's Baba. Is it Baba?
Yeah.
Here, come over here. Look at Baba. Baba. Alibaba. Alibaba is a company based in China. But when you buy Alibaba, you're really not buying Alibaba. You're buying a company that has a contractual claim on their future earnings and dividends. Because you're not allowed, you and I, as not Chinese citizens, are not allowed to invest in the Chinese stock market. You understand?
Yeah.
So sure, go ahead and buy Baidu, which is the Chinese... It's on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Baidu, which is on the NASDAQ.
Yeah, $204.
And that's one of their Googles.
That's one of their Googles.
Yeah, and they have another one called CNEX. I think it's called Sign. Oh, wait a minute. We should be able to look at their competitors. CNEX. That's one, and Sohu. So these are basically they say they're competitors to Yahoo and MSN.
I was just thinking like more of the production company that makes all the products.
Well, check out what can I say? I wouldn't do it, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. But it ain't easy. China is still not a democracy. It's still a communist dictatorship.
I understand that.
Okay.
They make all their stuff.
But they don't anymore. More of it's being made outside China because China's becoming too expensive.
Well,
so they're going to Vietnam.
I can't
they're
tell
going
to
watch
what? When I look at the back of it, it's made over there.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's made in Mexico now. Check out some
I
of
still this. See more from China, Taiwan, Malaysia.
Yeah.
I was just thinking.
Okay, let's turn this off.